James St. James, did you ever go to high school dressed up in drag?
I did, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience. I was, you know, this was, I would go, it was during the sort of Boy George era, so it wasn't so much drag with the tits and the, you know, the wig and stuff, but I would do a definite gender-bending thing, and I, you know, would get, I never was beaten up. I was never really beaten, because all the girls loved me, and so they would stop their boyfriends from beating me up. But I would definitely get the spit wads and pushed into lockers and called faggot. And you know, I mean, I sort of had that feel, that same feeling that Billy does, where, you know, I'm already being harassed. Why not? Just, you know, why not just be myself, and why not just, you know, push it to the limit and see what happens?
With a flash of your lashes, and you get to give every order with a click of your fingers. I see you gotta make believe you're queen of the land.
Get your corsage ready, because you're going to want to take the Feast of Fools to the prom. On today's show, we're going to be taking you to hang out with author and celebutante James St. James about his new book, Freak Show. It follows the struggles and triumphs of a gay teenager living in a conservative gay town.
St. James is well known for his first book, Disco Bloodbath, later renamed Party Monster, which details his relationship with club kid and murderer, Michael Alig. On today's show, we'll be talking about why he wants to reach out to young people.
Why the word reinventing needs to disinvent itself.
James dishes the dirt on who's gay in Hollywood and who's a real jerk.
And how gay youth culture is exploding online and in high schools everywhere. Stay tuned. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is the music of Ruben Bouchart from his album Golden Boy. The song you're listening to is Flash and Click, available on our website, feastoffools.net.
Stay tuned.
Hello.
A lady.
I just got blown out of my chair right there. Hello.
A lady who?
A lady lover. A lot of do.
How are you, Mr.? Should I call you Mr. St. James or JSJ? Or James.
Your Royal Highness.
Or Mr. St. John.
Mrs. St. John's good. I like that.
Do you like that? I love the way the British do that. Mr. St. John's smart.
Well, welcome to our show, Mr. St. James. I'm Fausto Fernos.
And I'm Mark Fillion.
Hi, Fausto. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. What'd you have for breakfast today?
I had some Cool Ranch Doritos, and that's Ooh, it.
The breakfast of champions.
That's what I was thinking.
And I bet your breath is just wonderful.
I've been kissing boys all day.
Now, what motivated you to want to write this book, Freak Show? Because your last book, Party Monster, details a real-life experience of the murder of Angel Melendez in the hands of nightclub promoter and entertainer Michael Alig. And yes, this book seems like an unusual departure.
Yes.
Which is about the fictional character Billy Bloom and his sort of struggles with homophobia in high school.
Right. Well, you know, I did it for the children.
You did it for the children.
I did it for the children, yes. Because, you know, When I wrote Disco Bloodbath, I was writing it for all the bitchy queens in New York who, you know, had been, who I just sort of needed to tell the story to.
Whoops, I'm sorry. I thought your book was called Party Monster. Disco Bloodbath.
It was re-released as Party Monster.
After the movie came out, it was re-released as Party Monster. And I had sort of written it just sort of like in a fog. And I was on, you know, every drug in the world when I wrote it. And it never dawned on me that that anybody else would be reading it other than like five, you know, bitchy queens in New York.
Who wanted the scoop on what really happened.
Right. So then when the movie came out on DVD, I noticed that like my email and my MySpace and everything was basically 14, 15, 16-year-old little gay boys who, for whatever reason, had decided that Michael Ehrlich was a god. Or I thought that they were sort of taking the message in the wrong way, because the message of Disco Bloodbath was not how fabulous drugs and murder mm-hmm. is, which is, I seemed like I was sort of glamorizing it. And so when Mark McVeigh from Dutton approached me about writing a young adult novel, I said, well, this was a good opportunity to do something that was in the same sort of vein as, I wanted to create a character who was like sort of a, like an anti-MAME mm-hmm. for teenagers, which is what I was thinking, and but not have the drugs and murder and all that stuff in it. So it's sort of, I mean, it's very much sort of the same thing about, you know, personal style and all the same messages, but it doesn't have the negative qualities.
What do you think it is about the kids that are attracted to the first book you wrote and to that whole lifestyle of the drugs, of the wild partying, of the murder?
Well, they also the glamour.
Why is it so glamorous to them?
Well,
was it a glamorous time?
Anytime, all teenagers are addicted to sort of like anything sort of subversive or the dark side or anything that is very different from their suburban existence. You know, mm-hmm. and this was sort of a whole new world that not many people knew about. You know, I mean, like outside of, you know, I mean, you might have glimpsed it on Geraldo once or twice or something like that. But it's something that. You know, like the outsiders and the freaks at school could really sort of grab onto and say, there's a world out there for me, and there's people like me out there. And I think that was a really positive message of the Club Kids, that, you know, freaks everywhere have a place, and that sort of a radical personal style and, you know, breaking boundaries and all that sort of stuff, I think that's very appealing to teens.
Well, so, I mean, were Club Kids really kids?
We were all in our 50s.
I mean, I always hear the term
right now,
club kid, and makes me go, "Is like, are these people, were they youthful at youth at heart, or were they actually very young people that were sort of leaving their families and breaking boundaries?"
You know, it's interesting that a lot of them really were like sort of rich little kids in Manhattan. There were a lot of like high school kids. In the very beginning, there were a lot of like 16, 17, 18-year-olds. And then, you know, as the years went on, we all got older and older, and now we're just old biddies.
Well, I think it used to be the thing where if you were young and you dressed up in costumes, you would get into the clubs because if you weren't old enough.
Yes, exactly. And if Michael Ehrlich was fucking you, then you could get into the clubs if you were 12 or 13.
That's why people wore a chicken mascot costume, because there's no ID for a chicken mascot.
Exactly.
Gigi says hi, by the way. I don't know if you remember Gigi.
Deluxe.
Gigi Deluxe and JoJo.
Yeah, of course. Hi, Gigi.
And,
hey, lady.
And JoJo says hi,
how
to. And I said to Gigi, speaking of the chicken, I said, is there anything you want me to ask him? She goes, ask him who the guy in the chicken costume was.
You know, that's so fabulous, because the guy in the chicken suit was Ernie Glam, okay?
Okay.
And Ernie developed a little crack problem at some point.
Don't we all?
Near the exactly. Exactly, but I'm bummed. Oh my god! But
so Ernie developed a crack problem.
Yes, he developed a crack problem, and you would see Clara the chicken like with a little crack pipe in her beak, like hiding in the corner. And so near the end of Clara's run, she was like a shaky little chicken running around with a crack pipe all the time.
Wow!
But it was a way for chicken to disguising themselves as real chickens to enter nightclubs.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you've done it a couple times, I'm sure.
I have. You know, I think that's sort of the attraction. I actually had a fake ID when I was dressing up in drag. But I think when you show up at a nightclub in this outrageous costume, people sort of are intimidated by your presence, don't you think?
You know, and I'll tell you something, too. If you're a drug addict, it's also wonderful to dress in drag or something like really scary and outrageous, because none of those guards or bouncers are going to be checking you, you know?
Now, here's a catch. Don't you think that sends out the wrong message? I mean, if you were a parent and your kid is like, I'm going to dress up as a chicken and smoke some crack.
well, I'm not advocating any of this right now. But if you, I'm just telling you how it is, lady.
But I mean, don't you think that it, in a sense that Freak Show is sort of your attempt to sort of address some of that? To send up more healing or positive or, you know, you don't have to make the mistakes that I made?
Well, that's just the thing. You know, that was the other thing. When they approached me about doing this book, I thought, well, you know, I'm a 40-year-old drag queen. What on earth do I have to say to teenagers? And then the more I thought about it, I thought, well,
I'm
you
not
know,
your mother, kid. Get out of here.
Right? But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, I do have something positive to say to teens because I have been through a hell of a lot. And, you know, the character of Billy really is me. That whole first part of the book where, you know, you go into where he goes into school and he thinks he's like, you know, Liza Minnelli and he's like air kissing everyone. That was my first day of school.
You actually pretended to be Auntie Mame your first day of school when you were 14 or 15 years old?
Yes, my first day of high school, I walked in and I was in my little new wave Vivian Westwood outfit thinking I was just the shit. And I walked in and I was scared and I had just seen Auntie Mame. I'd just been watching Betty Davis movies for the first time.
And you were a freshman in high school.
Russell. And I walked in thinking life is a party and this is, you know, darling, oh, I love your hair, blah, blah, blah. And everybody's face just dropped. And I realized in that first second that I had destroyed my entire, you know, high school career in those first 30 seconds of high school. And it's true. For the next 4 years, I was tormented. And, you know, I mean, rightly so. God bless me.
Where did you go to high school? Did you go to high school in Florida?
This was in Michigan. I went back and forth from Michigan to Florida, but I did go to a school in Plantation, Florida. So, and that's, you know, that's my house. That's my, you know, we had a wacky maid. I had a distant father. I mean, the whole setup is basically me for the book. And then I just sort of took it into a way that I wish I would have dealt with the problem as opposed to being a little sissy.
Is that part of your attraction to alliteration? Billy Bloom, St. James. I mean,
well, Billy Bloom, I was just thinking, you know, like a flower blooms and, you know, a teenager blooms.
He's fresh and young.
you can be a little cornier with right. young adult. That, you know, I mean, I can be a little more obvious with the metaphors.
A little Billy Chicken.
Yeah.
So what is different from in the book than your own life? Is it that you didn't get the high school jock as a boyfriend?
Or? No. I had a boyfriend on the DL, as the kids say.
Oh.
And was he the high school jock?
No, but he was one of the pretty boys in the back row. He wasn't on the football team, but he was pretty hot. And I, you know, I think too that we've all had in our lives, we've all had those straight boys who love the faggots, who pay attention to them, and they love the attention that we give them. They love flirting. They love working us into a frenzy, and then they pull back. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've had that, right?
I do that every day with my husband.
Yes, exactly.
I slap them and I call them a cock tease and then I move on.
Yes. But so I think that's sort of like a universal thing that I know from just in the clubs too, there are always those straight boys who just give you the puppy dog eyes and they just, and you're like, is he, isn't he, what is he doing? Why is he doing this? And then, you know. So I wanted to sort of address that phenomena as well.
Well, I think the key is you just got to get them alone. And
you separate them from the herd. You definitely do. And then
I go in for the kill.
A little rupee, a little.
And that's why they call him chicken. Mm-hmm. No, but I mean, don't you feel that in a sense that we have we're an accidental leadership? I mean, people that are in their 30s and 40s as gays and lesbians. We're answering the call to support GLBT youth.
Oh.
Like never before.
Like never before. That it's sort of, we're like sort of in a situation where we don't know what to do sometimes.
And we've all become chicken ranchers.
Well, you know, but the thing is, I mean, because, you know, our culture is such, you know, like, I mean, now it's a little different than it was, but there's always been a case where we have to hand down, you know, I mean, when I was a teenager, Michael Musto was my, you know, mother, was my gay mother, and would take me around and, you know, sat me down and made me watch, you know, all, you know, Rosalind Russell movies and, you know, things like that. And there's always been a case of gay mothering, you know.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think, I mean, do you think anything's changing or are we just, are things more visible for gay and lesbian youth?
Well, I think things are more visible and I think that Right now, we have, you know, for so many years, we had an unwritten culture where it was just passed. I mean, like, we were like the tribes in Africa where we would just pass down, you know, through just word of mouth. But mm-hmm. I think now, like, there's college courses and you know, there's more magazines and internet things and stuff. So we really are getting, our history is sort of being written now as opposed to back in the 50s.
Right, because before it used to be more oral.
Yeah, exactly.
Than anal.
Oral, but before. We were an oral culture.
What do you think about the phenomenon of gay straight alliances in high schools?
Oh my God. It just, I swear to God, I sob like a little girl when I see them in the gay pride parade, when they come up, when, you know, all the schools come marching. If that would have been there for me, I would have been a different person, you know?
Do you think that's part of why you do what you do is because you had such conservative upbringings?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, everything I do is a big fuck you to my, you know, father and grandfather. And, every time I put on a dress, I want to send a Polaroid, you know, home and say, look at this. But, I mean, what does this make you think?
So there's no, I mean, there's no, I mean, there's also an attraction and a joy in what you do, too. It's not just a fuck you to your family, though.
No. I mean, I have wonderful parents. I have absolutely marvelous parents.
So are they just, like, cringing or, like, have
a
heart attack?
They're very Southern, you know. Yeah. My father is a good old boy. He's a very Southern, you know. And the family has always been very political. So there was always, when I was a teenager, there was that element to it. But I do think that there is, any time you put on makeup, if you've ever dressed up in drag, you know that that's even better than going out is when you and your friends are all sitting around putting on makeup and trying on wigs and outfits and getting hysterical and having drinks. That, to me, is like one of the great joys of life is dressing up in a fun outfit, you know?
Well, that's part of the joy of YouTube, too, is that there's so many videos there right now that, in a sense, you don't even have to leave the house anymore.
Exactly, you know? And it seems to me that everybody is sort of picking up on this, you know, when you have all those like straight boys lip syncing on YouTube and stuff. It seems like everybody's sort of like finally picking up the joy of drag and like all the fun things that we have that nobody, you know, that other people don't.
Well, as a nightclub performer, how do you think that's the internet has affected nightclub scenes in general?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because you have someone like Jeffree Star and people like that who are more famous for their internet performances than they are for actually performing on stage. And I'm wondering if it might be, you know, like a disservice where you had someone like Blondie or, you know, like Debbie Harry or Madonna who performed on stage for 10 years before they became famous.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if becoming famous first and then honing your craft isn't like the best way to define your art.
Well, don't you think that it gives the public an experience to see an artist grow as opposed to seeing a final
product? Is the artist going to grow is my question.
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
You know, because
we probably know the answer to that one. But.
I mean, like Madonna had been in New York for 10 years. She'd been with Alvin Ailey. She went to the Mud Club. She worked at Danceteria. She was friends with Jean-Michel Basquiat. She, you know, with Keith Haring. You know, she had sort of a cultural background before she became famous, and it influenced her video and her art and her music. And that's why she was able to, you know, have so many phases in her career, whereas someone who becomes famous like Lindsay Lohan at age 10 doesn't have that opportunity to grow before she becomes famous.
So do you think a lot of this culture is going to be more derivative or more, derivative?
I mean, you see it already, don't you?
Or that's like true. If somebody gets on a career path, they're just going to stay on that same career path and not really change or, I hate to use the word, reinvent themselves.
Right.
I hate that word. Can we stop using the word reinventing? Can we agree?
Wait, but after I finish reinventing myself this time? Then no. We'll stop it. This is my last.
You get one more reinvention, James.
Okay.
And then you got to give up, hang up that coat.
then I'm frozen forever.
Well,
Botox
you can change.
For life.
I mean, why can't people just say, I'm changing as opposed to reinventing?
And I am changing. I am changing something. Yeah,
it's like, what is this idea of reinventing? I mean, let's really talk about this because, you know, as if it's like she changed her look. You know, Madonna's wearing a black-haired wig. Now she's wearing a blonde-haired wig.
Right. She reinvented herself again.
What? You know, it's like she walked into
like
her closet,
she's a
picked out an outfit.
In
you know?
A factory yeah. or in some lab cooking up some monster, you know?
Well, I guess, you know, I guess the word reinvention is getting thrown around a bit much. If every time you change your haircut, you know, you're called a new person. I think mm-hmm. that's probably a little silly, but
well, and so many club kids and nightclub performers now have this sort of idea that they're not going to hone an identity or a one look, but they're going to be trying to reinvent themselves every single
yeah,
night
you know,
of the week. And that, to me, I'm just like, I want somebody recognizable like Amanda Lepore, as opposed to having Amanda Lepore be a chicken tonight. Tomorrow she's a cadaver. The next day she's a clown.
And there is a gorgeousness, too, where you sort of wish maybe Karl Lagerfeld would get rid of the ponytail and, you know, after 40 years or whatever. But at the same time, you know, when you look back on it and you say, wow, they managed to stay true to themselves and they, like a Truman Capote was a Truman Capote was a Truman Capote all through his, you know, with the hat and the little ascot and all that, you know, the scarf. All you know that when someone has a look for 40 or 50 years, that can be a gorgeous thing, you know. And there is something to say for people who stay true to themselves and don't feel the need to, you know, change with every, you know, new fad that comes along.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly makes, you know, your wardrobe a lot more affordable.
Yes, easier to manage.
Well, yeah, you could be Quentin Crisp and be in that same damn purple shirt every day for, you know, the rest of your life.
Day you die.
Was Quentin Crisp sort of the first club kid ever? In a sense, or...
You know, it's interesting because I see a real parallel between Quentin and Lee Bowery, which is sort of a hard thing for most people to see, but when you would see both of them in New York at the clubs or you'd see them at parties or whatever, they were both like somebody's grandmother. And they had this philosophy where... anybody who, you know, Quentin Crisp was listed in the phone book, and anybody who wanted to call him could call him, and he would pick up and talk to anybody, and anybody who invited him anywhere, he felt it was his obligation to go. And Lee Bowery was the same way. Lee Bowery would stand in a club and have a line of like 1,000 people waiting to talk to him, and he would talk to every single one and hold their hand and say to them, and it was... They both had the same philosophy that if you're going to, you know, frighten the horses, then you have to be as nice and sweet and delicate about it, and you know, give them all a parting gift so that they aren't scared of you. You know, so you know, they both had this thing like where if I'm going to be outrageous and you know, scare people and be this groundbreaking new creature, then I have to go out of my way to be extra nice. And I think that's sort of an interesting thing that not many faggots have. Where there's like so much bitchiness in the clubs, and when you watch those legends, it was sort of an interesting thing. And they were very similar in that respect.
Early on in the book, Freak Show, your character Billy Bloom goes to high school in drag, decides to dress up as sort of this green
swamp monster
yes. Medusa thing.
Because he wants to push it to the limits, because people are already calling him a fag and telling him he's sick, so he wants to push it to the limits.
Did you ever go to high school in drag?
I did, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience. I was, you know, this was, I would go, it was during the sort of Boy George era, so it wasn't so much drag with the tits and you know, the wig and stuff, but I would do a definite gender bending, thing, and I, you know, would get, I never was beaten up, I was never really beaten, because all the girls loved me, mm-hmm. and so they would stop their boyfriends from beating me up. But I would definitely get the spit wads and pushed into lockers and called faggot. And mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I sort of had that same feeling that Billy does, where you know I'm already being harassed. Why not? Just, you know, why not just be myself and why not just, you know, push it to the limit and see what happens.
We're talking right now to author James St. James about his
Darling!
Book, The Star, the nightclub, with his new book,
Legend!
Freak Show. Extraordinaire. About his new book, Freak Show, that is available through our website, feastoffools.net, is highly recommended by all sorts of luminaries, and is sort of in the new genre of GLBT, or GLBT.
GLBTQ.
GLBTQ. What are we struggling to find a word to describe ourselves at this point?
I think I know a few words to describe you.
But I mean, as a community, do you think that we are struggling? Because I'm noticing that on MySpace, a lot of queer youth, mm-hmm. or GLBT youth, or gay youth, or whatever word that they are sort of shying away from using those kind of words to describe themselves, even though they're raging homosexuals.
Right. Well, I think there's always sort of like, anytime you start buttonholing, what's the word I'm looking
for? Pigeonholing, labeling, or identifying?
It starts getting a little too extreme. People are going to feel a little confined by that. And I know that, you know, a lot of times when I go out to, you know, gay clubs or whatever, I'll walk in and I'll think, God, these are not my folk. This is not my tribe, you know? And I'm, you know, if it's too leathery or it's too, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. I just feel that it's, I can see where kids might be like, they might see the Will and Grace Queens and think like, I'm not like that. Or they might see, you know, like whatever it is that they're thinking gay is, and they're sort of trying to escape from being so labeled.
Yeah, I understand. And I think that's what it is with a lot of kids, is that they don't like necessarily what they see, so they just don't want to identify it with. And it's hard for them to
don't want to identify with the generation before them, you know? And so, I mean, that's just part of being a teenager, is you want to be your own, you know, you don't want to be like those old... I remember when I first started going out, and this would have been I started going out to clubs when I was 14. Mm-hmm. I would stuff my bed, ride my bike down the highway, and go to this gay club. And the gays at that time, this would have been like 81, 82, were still those 70s queens with the handlebar mustaches and the tight jeans with the, you know... and a little leather vest and the feathered hair, and they'd smell like Paco Rabanne. And I would walk in and think, holy crap, I am so not one of these people. I'm not gay. I'm totally not gay. Because that to me was
Say that again so I can use that as a ringtone.
Right?
What are you not?
I'm not gay. So I'm sure that anytime any one of the little 14-year-old gay boys is sneaking out and going to clubs and seeing gay people, he's thinking, God, I'm not one of those Chelsea queens. I'm not one of these muscle queens. You know, I'm sure that they're rebelling against whatever is out there that he's seeing.
Mm-hmm. And on your blog, too, I've noticed that you focus a lot on young culture, young TV stars, and I can certainly understand the attraction, and I noticed you
young flesh is the attraction.
But you mentioned on Smallville that nobody believes that Smallville is got a gay subtext. We're firm believers, absolutely firm believers. But we wanted to I wanted to get your take on why people are dismissive of it.
I don't think anyone wants to believe that Superman is a big homo, except for, you know, us homos. But there's the way that Clark is always just making goo-goo eyes at all these boys that come on every week. It's just so obvious to me. And I'm not one of those queens who, you know, Benjamin Franklin was gay, who thinks that everybody's gay, you know.
It was Alexander Hamilton.
But it was Alexander Hamilton.
I can spot a queen when I know a queen, you know, from 50 paces, and that Clark Kent is a faggot.
Well, let's go over the things. He has a secret he cannot tell anybody.
Right.
Two, he feels different from all, alienated by
his outsider. Nobody could ever understand the things that he's going through. He's in this small town where, you know, he has to hide his secret. You know, he has to dress in what is it? Those flannel things.
He dresses in drag, in a sense. He hides his true identity by his clothing.
And then he meets these people on the down low. You know, he meets these other people with superheroes, you know, superpowers. They're just like him, and they have this little secret together. And then they have to leave, and he's alone once again. And it feels like one night stands, doesn't it?
Well, and they're all wearing spandex.
You know,
and they're terribly attractive. It gets me sexually frustrated.
They're all pretty boys. They're all pretty little boys. They come into town like the Flash or the Green Arrow, and they have secret identities too. And Clark sees it right away. His gaydar is up. His superhero radar is, you know, tingling. His spidey
sense. The Flash.
Yes.
Well, especially the Flash, the episode with the Flash, I think that really sort of I mean, I think
him chasing him, and you're just
chasing
like, wow.
Him. And,
remember, I don't know how hardcore a fan you are, but there was one season. I think it was like in season 2 or 3, uh-huh. where there was this little boy, this little like 11-12-year-old boy who looked to Clark, and he was always like hugging.
He was
Clark.
In love with him. Yeah.
And at the end, he died, and Clark took him up in a balloon, remember? And they were, like, holding each other, and it was, like, right before he died. Do you remember that episode?
I don't remember that episode, but I think I remember that little boy. I think he was like no, I'm thinking of X-Files.
There was this little tiny queen who was about 12-year-old, and Clark took him in under mm-hmm. his wing, and the little boy would just look up at Clark with these Google, and Clark was always like petting his head.
And he was on a couple of episodes, right?
Yes.
Okay, I do remember. I don't remember him dying.
No, well, I just remember at the very end of the one episode, Clark was going to give him a treat, and they went up in this balloon, hot air balloon. Wow. And it was
a hot air balloon?
Thing. Yes.
So he wasn't flying with him. He would just put him in a balloon.
Clark probably couldn't fly yes. then. James, I, after the show, give me your email. I'm going to send you a little movie of Clark Kent skinny dipping.
Tom Welling.
Have you seen it?
No.
You see his butt, and then he dives, and then
Wait,
you can
you
see his junk.
Tom Welling? You see Tom Welling's wang?
Supposedly Tom Welling. I don't know if you actually see his face. Let me tell you this.
If you've watched as many episodes of Smallville as I have, uh-huh. it's unmistakable uh-huh. that it's Tom mm-hmm. Welling. And he's not wearing a protection. He's very liberal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so is it big?
Give me some dimensions.
It's good, honey. It's blurry, but it's good.
If it touched you, James, it would cure you of any disease you have.
That's how powerful it is. Because here in Hollywood, you know, I sort of stalk him. I'm always looking for him somewhere, you know. And he's out a lot, and they say he's the biggest jerk in Hollywood.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Well, every gay man wants a piece of him.
I know. Apparently, when he's out, he thinks he is really the shit. And that sort of ruins it a little for me. Because I want to believe that he's that character, that sort of wide-eyed, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Giving, generous.
Well, he's a Michigan boy just like you.
Is he?
Uh-huh. I believe he is from Michigan, yeah.
Well, then when I see him, we'll have something to talk about.
But he's got a wife, doesn't he?
What?
He's got a wife.
I think I have a concept for a new reality TV show for you.
Yeah.
It's called Celebrity Date. and you and Tom Welling go on a date together.
I would watch that show.
I would watch that.
Well, yes, I'm there. I'm doing it. Let's pitch it.
Will the Wonder, are you hearing me?
I'm in the office right now. I will go upstairs.
Just scream it to them. Hey, Murray, get me on a TV show. I want to date Tom Welling.
I was like, yes, Mr. St. James, I'll get right on it.
Right, because that's how they are here. Whatever I say, they say, right, St. James, well, I'll get right on it.
Mr. St. James, I'm right on it.
Please, they have been trying to get rid of me here for 10 years
What
now.
Are you doing there? Are you like the receptionist? Are you like a filmmaker? Are you the custodian?
No, you know, they fired me.
they can't get rid of you.
Last year, I was working in development here. And I didn't last that long because I sort of, you know, I'm basically a lady of leisure, you know. I wasn't meant to really.
So they have a Chaise Lounge with a laptop computer for you.
And a box of chocolates and like a Marabou feather, you know, nightie that I wear. And I just sit there with my little dog.
But what are you doing? Like, are you developing like movies or show ideas?
That's the thing, because I would always have these really fabulous ideas, and they don't listen to me. Nobody listens to me here. So they ended up firing me, but I still end up. I have so, you know, I do the blog here. I'm always here. It seems like I'm here every day anyway. So they can't get rid of me. And I can tell they just want to. So
you know, that's a secret for any job in life. Even if they fire you, don't leave, and you'll still work there.
Uh-huh.
Until the restraining order kicks in, and then you're in trouble.
Yeah. So right. The book is James St. James Freak Show. Get it while it's
Dutton,
hot.
Comes out May 17th. And it's going to be sell like hotcakes.
Well, you can actually pre-order it already through our website, feastoffools.net. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. Please. I might order one right now.
You get one for yourself.
Uh-huh.
They make wonderful bedtime stories for your, you know, your, because you can, it's not just for gay teenagers, it's for anybody who's young and feeling like an outcast. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, anybody, you know, anybody who's a freak, who's ever felt like a freak, which I think is pretty much everyone, you know, is mm-hmm. at some point or another felt like they are the only person in the world who, you know, that nobody understands them. And I think that, I think it definitely has a crossover appeal.
Are you doing a book tour? Are you going to high schools and public libraries?
That's interesting you should say that, because I'm going to the anti-prom at the New York City Public Library. It's in 2 weeks, I think, where it's all the little gay boys and girls can take their same-sex partners if they don't want to go to their own prom. And it's a big national thing, and it's supposed to be really fantastic. So I was asked to go and preside over that, which I'm really excited about. Mm-hmm. And I'll be in New York a couple times. I will be in Dallas, Denver, where else?
Are you coming to Chicago?
You know, someone just asked me about Chicago, and I think maybe June 30th was the date that they were proposing. So there might be – what I'm sort of doing is – this is a little sneaky of me – is I'm booking Party Monster parties in different cities, because the people will fly me out for that.
Oh, and so you're doing that as a side gig.
And then you whip out the books and say, anybody want to buy a copy of Freak Show?
Then I set up a little stand and start hawking the book once I get there. But then I start calling bookstores and see if they want
to. Well, I think Women and Children First or Unabridged Books would be more than welcoming to you.
Wait, what's that called? I'll write that down.
Write that one. Women, I'll tell you after the show.
Yeah.
So we're going to do our breakdown. Ready?
Yes.
Breakdown 2007. Yeah. There's a questions. Answer them quickly. Your subconscious mind.
Oh my God, I don't know about this. Oh my God, okay, yes, go.
James St. James, what is your favorite color?
Magenta.
What's your favorite food?
Taco-flavored Doritos.
Describe yourself as a fancy shade of paint.
Poodle pink.
Ooh.
I don't know.
When you were a kid, what did you want to grow up to be?
I was going to be a performance artist like Laurie Anderson.
Wow. Did you have a pet when you were a kid, and what was its name and species?
It was a mutt named Candy, and that's my porn star name. You know, like when you... it would be Candy Ponce de Leon. Isn't that really good?
That's good.
Say that again so people can hear it real clearly.
Because the street that I grew up on was Ponce de Leon. And
Ponce de Leon.
Yeah. And my dog's name was Candy, so it would be Candy Ponce de Leon. So
your porn star name is Candy Ponce de Leon.
That actually
Wonderful.
Can work as a porn star name or a drag queen name.
Yeah, you know, actually, I think my drag name is going to be Your Belinda from now on.
What's the best feature of your body?
My 14-inch wang.
Okay, what's the biggest misconception people have about you?
Actually, it's my stretched-out man boobs.
And the biggest
misconception... That's no way to get chicken, honey.
Yeah.
And the biggest misconception is that you have a 14-inch wang.
Yeah, it all goes together beautifully. You should see me naked.
What turns you on?
What turns me on?
What is the biggest misconception people have about you?
That I'm probably... that I'm Seth Green.
You're so young and thin and beautiful.
And you're a redhead.
I loved you in Austin Powers. You were great in that.
Yeah. In fact, I get stopped on the street all the time saying, oh my God, Robot Chicken!
So what?
Stuffy! Oh my God, it's Oz!
What turns you on?
Rubber noses, corsets, Christian Louboutin heels, and Marabou feathered nighties.
Okay. So Tom Welling doesn't turn you on?
No. Tom Welling, you know who turns me on? Holy fuck. Can I say that?
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf, I just saw Disturbia last night. Oh my God, he's so cute. Have you seen it yet?
I saw Disturbia, and I was like, eh.
No, come on, that nose means that he's got a really cute ass. I mean, he's got a cute ass anyway. But
he's the
really
lead, right?
What?
He's the lead, right?
Yeah.
He ain't nothing.
Well, you know, I love the Twinks. I love the Aaron Carters. I'm all about Aaron Carter. So
that's the second celebrity date you're going to go on with. Okay, what's the best thing that happened?
I think Aaron should play Flip Kelly. And
he would be good.
Yeah.
He would be good.
And I keep mentioning that anytime someone brings up about casting or a movie or whatever, I'm trying to get it so that I can sleep with Aaron Carter.
So who's going to play?
Like I slept with Macaulay Culkin.
Who's going to play?
Did you really?
I did. I fucked that boy three ways to Sunday. Holy fuck. You saw that ass in the movie. I had that ass. I had my fist up that ass.
Really? He's a fisting bottom?
Well, he's a big bottom.
I had no idea.
Yeah, he was like, James, more, Seth.
I don't... I'm not buying this. Wait. Hold on a second. We're going to stop this for a second.
Wait.
You really did have sex with Macaulay Culkin.
What?
You really did have sex with Macaulay Culkin.
I know. Oh, like, I chased him around for about a year and a half and begged him every time I saw him.
But he's a metrosexual, so maybe he liked the fact that you were chasing him.
Well, he was one of those slip tellies. It all comes around. See, this is what I'm talking about. He's one of those straight boys who loves the attention. And he loved it when I would beg him to see his penis.
And did you ever see it?
I saw him in his underwear.
Oh, that's so not fair. You should write that into the contract. If Aaron Carter is going to be in Freak Show the movie, he needs to show you his wang before he even auditions for this.
Well, you know, when they were doing Party Monster, I'll tell you these stories afterwards because I can't tell this on the episode.
Okay.
Okay.
We're not
recording now.
Stop. He'll press that pause
button.
Yeah,
a really hot story about
I pressed the pause button.
I have a really hot story about Macaulay and Wilmer.
Sounds okay, like well, it was. Well, let's
okay,
keep,
let's go back. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be?
I have hair again. Oh my God, I miss hair.
Okay, what's one of the best things that's happened to you recently?
Being on this podcast.
Being on this podcast.
Good answer. What's the worst thing that happened to you recently?
Things are pretty good. Oh, I'm going to miss the Rue McClanahan signing because I've been on this podcast.
You're going to miss what?
Rue McClanahan is having a book signing in West Hollywood, and it's in 10 minutes. So.
Oh, we'll get off the phone.
We'll pinch this here. Okay, what should we be investing in? Any financial advice you would have for listeners?
You know, I'll tell you something. It just dawned on me the other day that tattoo removal will be a big thing coming up in the next 10 years because everyone has those damn, you know, like... thorns around their biceps, and it's going to start looking really ridiculous.
Okay. What would you like to see like Oprah doing in 5 years?
An enema. I don't know.
If you could travel back in time and meet anybody, who would it be?
You know, Farley Granger.
Who is Farley Granger?
Farley Granger was on Strangers on a Train and Rope. He was the handsomest man ever in the history of Hollywood. And I'm thinking I would go back and fuck Farley Granger.
And he came out as bisexual or something, right?
Yes, he just has a book that came out called Count Me Out.
In Alfred Hitchcock's film Rope, he played the brunette?
Yes.
With a conscience?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Who gives it away?
He played troubled pretty boys is what he played, always. Mm.
Now, what makes you mad?
What makes me mad? Fucking Nancy Grace, man. Holy... I watch her every day. I don't know. I'm so... anyway.
You're obsessed with her.
It's perverse of me to watch her because
she's
I hate
on
her
CNN.
So much.
She's the law person, and she's just like this conservative cunt.
She's... Yes.
Oh, that blonde.
Her fiance was murdered like 20 years ago, so she became like a DA or something like that after that. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, James, if your vagina wrote its own monologue, what would it say?
Ring my bell, baby.
What are you obsessed with?
What?
What are you obsessed with right now?
What am I obsessed with? Oh my god. Blake from American Idol.
Oh yes,
Blake. Yes. Do you think he's gonna win?
No, I have a feeling that it's I think Jordan should win. But I'm hoping I hope Melinda doesn't win. I'm a little tired of her.
She's a little too cute, isn't she?
Yeah, that little bobblehead thing of hers. She's not an American Idol.
And do you think Blake is gay?
I know Blake is gay. My friend in Seattle goes to the same gym as him, and he walks around with a boner and sings all the time in the locker room and checks out everyone's penis.
Is Chris? Do you think Chris is also gay?
No, I think Chris is straight, and I think Chris gives that gay vibe because he was fat.
Okay.
And he's sort of needy, so he needs people to love him.
Because, you know, he has a great body, and I thought he would actually still be in the competition had he actually shown some more skin.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is, because he was overweight, he might have those little elephant folds.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what?
What?
I'll take those elephant
folds. No, you won't.
I'll lift that flap up, girl.
What musical instruments do you play?
The skin flute.
Okay. What's for dinner?
McDonald's, Pop-Tarts, I don't know, something.
What are you eating for dinner tonight? What are you planning to eat for dinner?
I really have no plans. It'll probably just be me and a box of chocolate Pop-Tarts.
And what happens to us when we die?
We all join the same, we become energy.
Okay.
Is that it?
Is that it? Is that it?
I guess so. Thank you so much for coming on our show, James St. James.
Thank you. Thank you. Have me back again sometime.
Anytime. You're
the book
welcome.
Is a freak show. It's available. It's Bundutton Press.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who buys a copy will get a phone call from me.
Wonderful.
A personal
we'll
home
put
visit.
Your phone number on the
yes, yes.
Tom Welling, if you're listening, and I know you listen to the show, James is lonely and waiting for you.
Oh my God.
He wants you to come home.
On that note where James is lonely.
He's waiting
James
for you.
He's a lonely old faggot. Goodbye.
He's lonely for you, Tom Welling.
Okay.
And Aaron Carter, you got to show the Wang if you're going to get the role.
Aaron Carter, James is a lonely old queen. Show your Wang.
James, I'm going to send you that film.
Oh, yes, please.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. Mm-hmm. Run off to your book signing.
Okay.
Tell Rue we said hi.
I will. It was nice talking to you guys.
Thank you
talk
so much.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Author and writer and nightclub, drag queen, club kid, whatever you want to call him, James St. James, is an expert on gay culture and the urban experience. And his new book, Freak Show, is available.
I'm going to say it on our website, feastoffools.net. Freak Show.
And today's show is sponsored in part by Eric Daly.
Create a look of effortless sophistication. Look your very best. See what it feels like to get a great hairstyle. Eric Daly works with your hair to give it the cut and color you'll simply love.
We love our haircuts, and you will too. Make an appointment today with senior stylist Eric Daly.
Only at Toujours Salon and Spa. That's 5224 North Clark Street, located in the heart of Andersonville. Call 773-784-7851 or visit toujoursspasalon.com.
And that is all we have for the Feast of Fools podcast today.
Mm-hmm.
The music that we're featuring on today's show is by Ruben Bouchart and his album Golden Boy, available also on our website, feastoffools.net.
And at feastoffools.net, you can buy a t-shirt, support the show. We couldn't do the show without your generous support. So make a donation, buy a t-shirt today.
Happy birthday to Jeff in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He's turning 29.
How do you know it's his birthday?
Well, because I go to feastoffools.net/birthdays and find out which one of our listeners is having a birthday today.
Wow. Just for today?
Well, an entire month of May. We
ooh,
can find
the lusty
out,
month of May.
We can find out that Corey Wilcox is having a birthday.
Happy birthday, Corey.
Annie in Oregon.
How did these people get their birthday things up there?
Well, they got a Feast of Fools profile and they filled out their birthday information and we can just wish them a happy birthday. It is sort of random because we don't always do it on the shows, but from time to time we do.
Yeah, it's nice. And it's a wonderful thing, these profiles. We're really getting to know our listeners and the listeners are getting to know each other. There's a lot of hot action going on the forums, people talking about different things, breaking news items or what they like, what they don't like.
Find out more updates on JoJo and the skull.
The skull in the pot of water.
Skull, all sorts of fun things on the, and not so fun things and scary things and interesting things on the Feast of Fools forums.
Mm-hmm.
There's feastoffools.net/community. We want to thank you so much for listening to today's show. I'm Fausto Furnos.
I'm Mark Fillion. Bye-bye. Bye.
Princess, you are the family doll.
If we paint up your nails, then the dirt.